Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Meketz. It means at the end of, and as I have said in previous years, this has to do with some end times prophecy. This Torah portion is Genesis 41, starting at verse 1, going to Genesis 44, verse 17. Its Haftarah is 1 Kings chapter 3, starting at verse 15 to 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 1. Brit Hadashah is Romans chapter 10, verses 1 to 13. Let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam. Abba, we thank you for your Torah. We thank you for your Shabbats. We just thank you for your mercy and compassion to us. Thank you for giving us hope that Messiah will return. I pray for your people on the planet, wherever they are, that you will bless them for keeping your Shabbat. Thank you, Abba, for all that you do for your people. And please bless these words. May my words fall to the ground and die, but may your words grow and prosper. I ask all this in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Okay, Meketz, at the end of. I want to spend a little time talking about dreams, because I think in the Hebrew Roots community in particular, we are just now beginning to understand the value of dreams. You know, when we were growing up, probably, you know, you heard this, and I know I heard this, that the Lord stopped sending dreams and visions and doing miracles and those kinds of things. Now, some people may have heard that, some people haven't. It depends on, you know, which denomination you grew up in. But the fact of the matter is, there are still Christians who believe that the Lord does not speak to people the same way that he did, you know, back there before the end of the book. For, you know, for instance, like John was like the last guy who got any kind of prophetic dream, and after that, the Lord shut it off. Now, I really don't know where they get that idea, but they did. Now, when I was growing up, I had a lot of dreams and went through a lot of difficulties because of that doctrine. No one in my church wanted to hear that I had had a dream that I believed came from the Lord, because they didn't believe that the Lord sends dreams. But biblically, this is not true. We know that the Lord sends dreams and visions to his people, to his prophets, throughout the scriptures. In the beginning there are dreams, and at the end there are dreams, and in the middle there are dreams, and thank God for the dream that Joseph listened to take Yeshua and his mother to Egypt to escape the sword of Herod. Oh my goodness, can you imagine if the people stopped believing that the Lord speaks to them in dreams and visions? And so in the Hebrew Roots community today, we have people who are more and more paying attention to dreams, and I believe this is a good thing. We need to hear the dreams of people. There are some rules that are associated with dreams. They come with interpretation. You know, if somebody interprets the dreams for you, then that's possibly, you know, you can say, well, that dream came from the Lord. You know, Joseph, for instance, when he was dreaming, he did not interpret his own dream. In fact, when he dreamed about the sun and moon and stars, and that, you know, the family was bowing to him, you remember that Jacob said, do you think really that your mother and I are going to bow to you? See, it was Jacob that interpreted that dream. There's no indication that Joseph interpreted his own dreams. And as a matter of fact, in last week's Torah portion, when Joseph was in prison and two men there, the wine cupbearer and the baker, had dreams, it was Joseph who interpreted their dreams. So one of the things about dreams is cautionary that we need to understand is that when we have a dream and we believe it's significant, we need someone else to interpret. Now, we may have an interpretation, but we need to get an interpretation. That's because there has to be two witnesses. You know, you have the dream, but that dream happens in a different mind state. And you can be a witness to your own dream, but you need someone else to witness your own dream. And you must not try to sway someone's interpretation. You know, you may have a dream and think you know what it means, and someone says, well, I think it means this. You know, it may be that their interpretation is correct, and yours is not. And so you have to be open-minded about the meaning of your dreams. So my caution in dreaming is that to always make sure that you have two witnesses. Oftentimes in Scripture, we will see that similar dreams repeat themselves. This is another way of having two witnesses, is when you have a dream twice. For instance, Joseph dreamed of the sun, moon, and stars, and they are all bowing to him. But then he also dreamed about sheaves of wheat, and they were bowing to him. Now, you know, you would say, well, a sheaf and a star, you know, that's two different dream symbols, and they don't have anything to do with each other. Well, yes, they do, because the basis for the dreams, the underlying theme of the dreams, is about him having his family bow down to him, you see. And so the theme is the same. So in essence, he had the same dream twice. And you'll read in the Torah portion in Miketz where Pharaoh dreamed, and he dreamed twice. So somehow there has to be a second witness. So if you have a dream, you need to get an interpreter, and you can be a witness to the dream as long as you're willing to accept that your interpretation of the dream is not absolutely correct. But a better way to have a second witness is actually for you to have the dream twice. Another way for us to have a dream and have it be a valid dream is if two different people have the same dream. So we just need to make sure that as we're paying attention to dreams and visions, that we have at least two witnesses for every one of those dreams and visions. But at the end of days, dreams and visions are going to become very important to us, because the Lord said that He's going to pour out His Spirit, and there are going to be dreams and visions. And so we need to start paying attention, especially when these dreams and visions come from Torah observant Hebrew brethren and sisters and brothers. And the reason that I say that is because the Lord defines a false prophet as someone who has a dream and it even comes true, but he says, you know, walk away from the Lord. Go over here and do this stuff with me. Don't worry about doing that Torah stuff. That's a false prophet. Well, in essence, that's what Christianity does. So a person who is in a different mind frame regarding the Lord and His law, that has a dream, and you know, their dream may come true, But they're a false prophet. And the Lord says, don't listen to them, don't pay attention to them. It's a test for you. So this is another aspect of dreams and visions that we need to be careful of in the Hebrew Roots community. Now, I know there's a lot of excitement these days about all the dreams and the visions that are happening, and that's a good thing because we are doing what the Lord has always done. We are acknowledging the power of the Lord to speak to His people through the symbology of dreams and visions. And this is a good thing. But let's keep ourselves, you know, kind of in check. You know, when you first start to drive a car, you know, when you're learning to drive a car, you got to learn to drive in that one lane. Otherwise, you're going to go head on into another car coming in the opposite direction. So we have to just, you know, make ourselves stay in the lane and keep our head about us in all of our excitement over the dreams and visions that are starting to happen among us. It's wonderful, but we have to make sure that there's two witnesses and that it's not coming from a false prophet, someone who believes and teaches that if you keep that Torah thing, you know, that you are, you know, keeping the burden and you're fallen from grace and you are out of the Lord's will. So you would just want to be careful with that. The other thing about dreams and visions is that, you know, those people are the prophets of the Lord. When the Lord pours out His Spirit upon you to have a dream or a vision, He is using you as a prophet. And if you're going to be put in that position, you need to know that prophets are often persecuted. Now, prophets often suffer in order to set up the conditions for eventually helping the brethren. We see this in Joseph. Joseph both prophesied and was made to suffer for his prophecies. He's just like Yeshua, or Yeshua is just like him. Yeshua was prophesied about, okay? Other people prophesied about Yeshua at, you know, literally it was Yeshua giving prophecies to his prophets about himself. So he, like Joseph, prophesied about himself. And he suffered for those prophecies just like Joseph did. Now, it was necessary in both instances for Yeshua and Joseph to suffer. Because why? Because there has to be a process. There has to be a process in getting the brethren to come to them. With Joseph, it was for salvation from physical hunger and for reconciliation of the family. With Yeshua, they have to come to Him for salvation from spiritual hunger and for reconciliation of the family. So you see, in both instances, the need for salvation from some kind of hunger is a prerequisite to reconciliation of the split in the family. And it's actually this split in the family is the reason for the prophecies. We get in the beginning that there's going to be a split, and we get at the end that there's going to be a reconciliation. In between, there is a split. And in between the split and the reconciliation, in that process, the Lord sends dreams and visions to His prophets in order to facilitate that restoration process. So any one of us can be used for this purpose. Now, in addition, when there is the beginning of the reconciliation process, we see from the story of Joseph that someone needs to bring Joseph to the attention of Pharaoh. Because Joseph helped someone, that person now is in the position to go to Pharaoh and say, Joseph should come and help you. And what is it that Joseph is coming to help with? He's coming to interpret a dream. You see, so the moral of the story here is that we should always be willing to help someone, whether or not he or she is of our faith or is one of us. You know, that butler there, he was not a Hebrew, but Joseph helped him. So we need to put ourselves in the position of helping everyone, because when we do that, we are then ourselves in a position to be helped. Our outreach, our kindnesses then become a way for our family to be reconciled. And I think that this is one of the things that we miss in the Hebrew Roots community. We are really not a very kind people to each other at the moment. We're contentious with each other rather than being helpful. And a lot of people don't want to reach out to people who are not of the Hebrew Roots faith. That's not a way to act. That's not a correct way to act. We're to help everyone because the Lord uses everyone. The Lord uses the Egyptians or the Gentiles as well as the Hebrews, you see. And so we need to stay open to the possibility of the Lord sending a Gentile into our path and asking us to help that person. And it could be that down the road that sets us up to be helped by that person. So it is that here in the end of days, just like in the time of Joseph when they were going through the process of reconciliation, the Lord is using dreams and visions. And so I believe that we're going to see a lot more of this, a lot more reports of dreams and visions, and that it's a signal to us that perhaps we are getting close to the end of days, and that our reconciliation with the rest of our family is close. And now, regarding the reconciliation, one of the things that we have to do is to figure out how we become one in our hand, as it says in Ezekiel 37. Well, we get this idea from the story of Joseph here, where we see the brethren come to Egypt and they don't know who Joseph is. It's a certain amount of blindness that you know, they're looking right at him, but they don't recognize him. So the first step is to recognize that there is blindness. You know, you can't fix a problem if you don't know what the problem is. And it's, you can't say the first step is to cure the blindness, because if you don't know you're blind, then you can't cure the blindness. So the first step is to cure the blindness. And it's very interesting. This week, I put a story in Beast Watch News about this very thing. And I will just read you part of it, but I've also told you in times past, very recently, in the last few months, that more and more of our Jewish brethren are beginning to reach out to Ephraim. We've seen this with Yair Davidi and some other Jewish people over the last couple of decades that have started to look for Ephraim. The Talmud even reports that, you know, Ephraim is out here in the world. But we're seeing an increase in the number of Jews who are beginning to look for Ephraim. Now, there's an article. It says, Israeli messianic leaders say the church needs Israel. Well, I agree with that. The church does need Israel. On the other hand, you know, Israel also needs the church. In other words, the Jews in Israel also needs the church. They need Ephraim. They need Christians, you know. But one of the things I want to read to you out of this article has to do with the restoration. It says the underlying theme of the chat, these two men were chatting, was how to deal with the notion that Israel and its Jewish population must convert to faith in Yeshua in order to complete the restoration process. Now, that's for them to deal with personally between themselves and the Lord. But here's a statement, and it says, Israel is not being reformed, it is being restored. See? And it says it began 105 years ago with the first pioneers, through whose strength and courage and with God's help, this land has become one of the most advanced nations in the world. And here we are doing the same work of the pioneers on the spiritual level. They laid the foundation for the restoration of Israel physically, and now there are pioneers in the body of Messiah. The Jewish people are rediscovering our relationship with Yeshua. And he further says, you cannot restore something without first clearing out the garbage, being both on the Jewish side and on the Christian side. So, in Israel, amongst the Jews and amongst the Messianic Jews, which are two different groups, you know, there are all different kinds of Jewish groups and then Messianic Jews as well. But among them, they are beginning to lose their blindness about Ephraim. Now, they're looking for Ephraim. They're looking for Joseph. And some of them think that Joseph and Esau are all mixed up together and they, you know, they put Esau, they actually are labeling Joseph, that's us, they're labeling us as Esau. There's some confusion about it, but that's understandable, because think about a blind man who has just been restored his sight. Remember the blind man that Yeshua restored his sight, right? And he said to the blind man, what do you see? And the man says, I see men as trees walking. Now that's not a very clear picture of a person, is it? You see somebody as a tree walking. It is a symbol of how when you first come out of your blindness, things are not real clear. And so what did Yeshua do? He touched the man's eyes again, right? And then the man saw clearly. What he's teaching us there is that there is this process of losing the blindness. You know, they're waking up, they're understanding that Joseph is out here in the world amongst the Gentiles, okay? Joseph in the days of Genesis was in Egypt amongst the Gentiles. Here we are in the West, in spiritual Egypt, and spiritual Babylon, we are mixed in here, and they now have to begin to see us. When will they begin to see us clearly? Well, it's going to happen in next week's Torah portion when Judah steps up and says, take me instead of Benjamin. He steps up for Benjamin because Benjamin represents the other son of Jacob, who is Torah observant and represents both the Messiah and the Hebrew Roots movement at the end. Now, I believe that this moment is going to happen probably in a little bit more of a process. The Lord always seems to work in processes rather than just as in events, you know. I believe that part of the process is going to have to do with the elections. They're going to, when they want to take over the Temple Mount, they're going to need Ephraim to come and help them. So they're going to ask for help from Christians, okay, to help them support the Temple Mount. They're going to ask for evangelical support on the Temple Mount. They're going to come to Joseph. They're going to say, help us. Okay, we need this spiritual food. They're going to come and ask for help. All right? So now they're going to be standing before Joseph, and they're not still going to recognize who he is. But then Israel is going to step up and help Benjamin and become a surety for Benjamin. And just this past week, I saw something in the scripture that I think is going to be the reason why Judah's eyes finally open to who Joseph truly is and who Benjamin is. And it comes in Jeremiah 51 verse 50. You that have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still, remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come to your mind. Now, Jeremiah chapters 50 and 51 have to do with the destruction of Babylon. The destruction of Babylon comes during the Great Tribulation. We don't know whether it comes at the beginning, at the middle, or at the end. I have decided that, you know, at certain times it could come in any of those places. I still don't know when that's going to happen. But I do believe that Babylon is America. And that the sword that the Lord is going to bring has to do with the Medes and the Persians. I believe that's Russia and Iran. We now see that Russia is getting ready to have war with America. And there's a possibility that nuclear bombs will be dropped. There will be hacking of our infrastructure, of our nuclear electrical power plants, of our other electrical non-nuclear grids, of our municipalities and so forth, where nothing will work and everything will be chaotic. And so there will be those who escape the sword. Now, I believe that those who escape the sword will probably already be in the camps of the righteous. And I say that cautiously because, you know, it's possible that we will escape the sword before going into the camps of the righteous, but part of the purpose of being in the camps of the righteous is for protection. So I'm saying that I believe that this is going to happen while we are in the camps of the righteous, which means we are already in the Great Tribulation before Russia attacks. Now, before you run off and say, well, Kimberly is prophesying about the timing of the Russian war against America, please don't do that. Because I'm saying it's a possibility it could happen that way. I don't know. The Lord hasn't really told me, you know, how he's going to do that. So Russia could attack us before the Great Tribulation. The timing of it is not important to the message I'm bringing. Last week, I saw something in that scripture there, Jeremiah 51:50, that I had not seen before. Let me read it to you again. You that have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still, remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. And all of a sudden, it occurred to me that it's possible that what Benjamin being a surety for Judah being a surety for Benjamin. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Judah being a surety for Benjamin means that we will go back. We're Benjamin. We're going back to Israel as a surety, as a refugees. Okay? We're going to be returning to Israel as refugees. Those who escape the sword in Babylon may be the first to return to Israel, and we go as refugees, and Judah then takes care of us. You see? I just think that's a possibility, and I was very excited when I realized that that may be one of the ways that the Lord helps those in Babylon who escape the sword. That Judah steps up and he becomes the surety for his brother Benjamin. That's us. That's the Hebrew Roots community. Now, in being able to have this happen, you see, Joseph, that's us, has to demonstrate some things which get his brother's attention. First of all, he has to have some authority in the world. You know, Christians do have authority in the world. And the brothers later will feel that Joseph could use his authority to their detriment. In other words, they really feel that Christians have some kind of authority that can be used to their detriment. I think it's one of the reasons why we have meetings regarding Israel's security at the Vatican. You see, there's this kind of underlying something there, underlying the feelings of Christians and Jews, that says there's some authority here and we need to try to get that not to be to our detriment. Of course, we know that ultimately the church, the Catholic Church, will betray Judah. That's just prophesied in the scriptures. There's nothing to stop that. So the ability of Joseph, or today, those who are in the Christian church, to demonstrate authority to Judah is important. Judah needs to be able to see this authority. Then there has to come the time when Joseph is reunited with his father, Jacob. You know, as long as Joseph is outside the land, and as long as he's living like a Gentile, he is not really being reunited with his father, is he? Now, Joseph, in the Genesis account, lives according to the principles of the Torah, but he appears to be a Gentile. And there's a spiritual meaning underlying that, which is a prophecy at the end of days, because Joseph is intermingled with the Gentiles, and he needs to come out saying, I'm a Hebrew, which we're going to see that in next week's Torah portion. He's going to come out and say, listen, I'm not this. I am one of you. And that has to happen before there is a reconciliation between him and the father. It's actually a part of the process of reuniting Jacob with the father. It doesn't mean that Joseph doesn't have a relationship with the father. It just means that there's a reuniting with the father, and that reuniting with the father has also to do with the brothers. Now, obviously in the story, Joseph reunites with his brothers first, and then the father comes, which is a kind of a timeline of, you know, we reconcile with our brothers in the house of Judah, and then the Messiah comes. You see what I'm saying? So now you're getting a sense of the process and how the Lord uses processes and how he reveals to us in the Torah portions the process that he's using. And, you know, it's interesting that every year more of the pieces of the puzzle start to fall into place. So now when the brothers come to Joseph looking for help, he puts them to the test. Now, the test for the Hebrew Roots people is, are you going to accept us in mutual respect and in mutual recognition? Are you going to be respectful of us? Are you going to stop trying to convert us to Judaism because we've stopped trying to convert you to Christianity? You know, there's a middle ground there. You know, we're willing to do the Torah thing if you're willing to, accept that our Messiah is our Messiah and we need to not deny him. You see, so that's going to be one of the tests. And Joseph put his brethren through a number of tests. You know, he gave him the cup. What's the cup? He put the cup in Benjamin's sack, and he put all their money back into their sack too. I mean, he just kept putting them through these tests. The cup is the cup of the Messiah. That's going to be the final test. You see? And so he put the money in the sacks and sent them home. What has Christian America done with Israel, the state of Israel? We have financially supported the state of Israel, have we not? It's a test. And so then at some point they come back and, you know, we have to go through this next test, which is regarding the Messiah and, you know, mutual respect. Now, it's okay for us to check out the fruits of people like Joseph did. It's okay for Judah to check out our fruits as, you know, Benjamites as well. And so we need to be cognizant that right now these things are happening in the world, that there are many more Jews now who are beginning to not only look for, but they're reaching out to us, and some of them are reaching out to us without asking us to convert to Judaism. Some of them are still reaching out asking us to convert to Judaism, but my friends, that is not a bad thing. You know, when somebody offers you something, you say thank you, but no thank you, and you be respectful about it because you realize that that's an act of friendship. That's an act of reconciliation. And so let's not go around rejecting our Jewish brethren for asking us if we would like to convert to Judaism. I think it's a compliment. They're complimenting our fruits because they're very careful. They're very careful. And so they're complimenting our fruits when they say, come on over here and let's convert to you to Judaism. The test for us is going to be if they are willing to have a mutual respect relationship. And so I believe that we're coming to a time when we're going to see the speeding up of these things, and especially when and if we here in Babylon, America, get to go back to Israel as refugees. I don't know, folks, if that's how it's going to happen or not, but I think it's a possibility, and I'm just excited about, you know, the whole end time thing happening right before our eyes. We see now that just like what Joseph went through, 20 years of exile in Egypt, and we've been 20 years or 2,000 years prophetically in Egypt, as you know, among the Gentiles, that now we are standing face to face with our brethren. We have still a few more steps, a few more prophecies, a few more processes to go through in order to get this reconciliation to happen. But I am so excited about it that I just can't hardly contain myself. Anyway, I hope that this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.